7654321.
You'll never have the sacred stone.
Oh, this you crazy mother.
Welcome, friends, to episode 230 of Color of Magic, your Magic Gaming Podcast, where we talk about all types of issues that affect gamers at and away from their gaming tables and computers. I'm your host, Power Dragon, and still got my main man down in Texas, Mr. Brian Cyanek. How's it going, dude?
The champ is here. The champ is here.
One of us has to be.
At the time you hear this, I'll be ranked somewhere between 20 and 50 on the WWE 2K24 leaderboards, because those things fly fast. While I'm talking, people are playing, and that thing is flipping over and over. But again, one of the top-ranked players for the time being. Going to try to keep that going.
It's pretty crazy, dude, considering how many people have already hopped on that game on, like, day one.
Right. And a lot of people, like, I've been checking, you know, talking to people on Reddit and stuff, find out what they're doing. And a lot of people say, you know, they just don't play online because, yeah, I mean, it can become a wretched hive of scum and villainy. Like, fair. You know, all when people are playing for, I mean, many of us, I'm sure, YouTube. So we're to some extent playing for money. Yeah. And then it's a pro wrestling game. When all else fails, you might just pull out a chair. And hit. Do you see? It looks like the light's flickering. Do you see it?
No.
Maybe it's something. Well, now that I've said it, now I don't. Maybe my Zencaster.
Oh, it kind of is a little bit.
I guess I probably need.
Who knows? Sometimes it could. I know whenever I see weird lights flickering when I have my cameras, it has to do with like the frequency of the LED versus what the camera picks up. So, like, sometimes that's just a thing.
Okay, yeah, it must be, because I'm looking directly at the light bulb, but it's not flickering. And then I look at the screen, and I see a flickering effect. So,
I realized? At episode 230, it's one of the favorite dad jokes or kid jokes, depending on how you view it. But we are now at the dentist's favorite number, because it's 230.
Yeah.
All right, got to get that in there.
Right.
Yeah, I also want to tell everybody, we are scoping new sponsors right now. We have a couple we're going to be talking to. We do want to say thanks to Cool Stuff Inc. for sponsoring the show while they did. But for those of you, I'm sure you saw, several creators are no longer sponsored by them. They reduced their sponsorship for a lot of people. So we're talking to a few people. But if you have a company and you want to support two fun guys doing a good show, reach out to us. There's a chance we might work with you.
And we're seeing, you know, throughout the industry, people are reevaluating their budget.
Yeah, so for sure.
You know, that's part of doing business. This, you know?
Yep, they're going to come and they're going to go. If you do want to help us out, which we always appreciate it, you can always go over to Patreon. Go to patreon.com/colormagic. You can support us just for like $2. You can help us out. Even in lieu of us having a sponsor, it would help out so very much in the meantime if you go do that. Really, really appreciate it. And thanks to those who have already done it, like Daniel Lucio. So thank you for being a patron. But you know what? Let's talk about our lead story here, because
like that, do we know yet if it's, because I don't want to have that flash and if like the audience is going to see that flickering. Do you know if they're going to see that?
Or? No idea. I have no idea if the camera will pick it up or not.
I don't know.
Because it's mostly stable for a good chunk of it.
Okay.
All right. But yeah, okay, so this accessibility thing, this kind of covers a lot of things. I think when people hear the term accessibility, they think about just like handicap, you know, people in wheelchairs, you know, whatever, you know, but accessibility is a lot of things. A lot of it is sometimes could be cost. Sometimes it could be language barriers. You know, sometimes it could be locations. You know, we've talked about things on the show where there's certain places people don't want to go for various reasons, right? So accessibility can come in a lot of different ways. And I feel like we've been seeing that a bit, really across a lot of different games, but particularly, you know, we'll talk about Magic because we've been seeing some of that lately, about some different ways that those are hurdles for people getting into the game, or even just continuing to enjoy the game, you know, for people already here. And, you know, unbeknownst to me, you mentioned this just before we went live, there was somebody who even wrote a thing talking about how foils are hard to read.
Right.
You know, and I've always thought I have glasses with a good prescription. I've always thought foils were hard to read. So I can imagine somebody has vision issues, real vision issues, having a problem. You know, and I felt that way about every card game. Like, foil, like, I get it. Foils are shiny. They're attractive. People like collecting them. I'm not saying you're wrong for that. But people have asked me before why I'm not big on foils. It's just like, I just have never liked reading them or looking at them. Like, they just never have. And part of the reason really is because they're difficult to read at times. So it doesn't surprise me that somebody with worse vision doesn't like looking at them.
And since we mentioned it, I apologize if I massacred this name, but Wow Chaka on Twitter, goes by, I believe, or X, whatever it's called this week, Skite MTG, former champion of Pro Tour touring in 2018, wrote an open letter basically talking about actually several accessibility issues, I think including the proximity of the pro play to the other stages that we talked about last week, where it was difficult for some people to hear what was happening, or if you have anything that might be considered, you know, on the ADHD or the autism spectrum, it just made it very hard to concentrate on what was going on around you.
Yeah, and there's some things that I think are easier issues to solve than others. Because you talked about, like, even in the convention, like, you could just restructure how the rooms are laid out or whatever, and, like, that helps. I think there will always be some level of noise, but you can reduce it somewhat or make it easier. I'm curious, like, in the case of, say, like, foils, what you even do at this point? Because you're so far into the industry where everybody's had foils that seem to be hard to read in a ton of different games because they're all kind of following the same thing. That people have grown to say this is what we love and what's accepted at this point.
Yeah, right? And I don't see Wizards stepping in, because one of the things that I guess it was kind of, this letter is, I guess, kind of drifting toward is maybe not letting people use their foil cards in tournaments, and I can't.
Oh yeah, imagine. That's not going to happen.
Yeah, that'd be the easy solution, but as you said, that is just not happening. People are they paid for those cards, and they bought those cards from Wizards, who would like to continue to sell them cards, so that is not a step that's going to be taken.
Oh, well, also, at this point, you have a whole, couple of player generations that all their cards are foil, practically. Because that's all they buy. If they've been buying collector's boosters, like, 3/4 of the cards you get in a collector booster are foil, right? So, that's not likely to change. And that's what I'm saying, like, that type of thing becomes hard to fix. I don't know. Now, there are some sleeves that do take the glare off the front of foils. I don't know if it's like the matte sleeves or, but they do take some of the glare off, and those help. But those also are for your cards, right? If the opponents aren't using them, that doesn't necessarily help you. Right?
And you will remember one of our big debates on Magic Twitter a few weeks ago was talking about asking people, or should you ask people if you can touch their cards? Absolutely, you should, you know, especially in post-COVID time, before you touch any other person's property, just as a matter of politeness, you would want to ask to see the card. Yeah, that's absolutely going to be more of a thing as we see these foil cards, you know, become just, as you said, so many people, the entire deck may be foil. So it just...
And like I said, this isn't even just a Wizards thing. Like, you know, those out here, we've been playing card games forever. Like, foils have always just, like, there's something about the white or gray, like, shiny back with the black text over it that's just a thing. And it's even worse the smaller the text gets. So, like, as you add more text to a card, or God forbid, if any of y'all have tried to just read a Yu-Gi-Oh card at all, like, I don't know if they're using 2-point font on some cards. Like, it's so small, right? And that's with good prescription and everything, that Yu-Gi-Oh cards have always been hard to read.
And so something else, you know, when you just, this isn't even, again, this isn't visual impairment or any of the things we just talked about. Even if you, let's say a card like Questing Beast, if it's the first time you've seen that card, yeah, fine. You read all the words, but until you see the thing in action, it's going to be, you're going to have a hard time comprehending everything that card does. And you may need to, you're going to probably have to go home and look at some rulings and see some other people play the card yourself. But the first time you see it, yeah, you're at a, it's like a new pitcher in pro baseball. You're at a complete disadvantage because you've never seen how this thing works. And with a game like Magic, where there's, especially if you talk about a modern or any older format where the card pool expands infinitely, and I get this way where I don't have a solution for that. It's just some cards are some cards have just notebooks worth of text on them.
Yeah, and these become tough conversations, right? Because you're not trying to discount or dismiss any particular person with any issues. But at the same time, we kind of say, like, is there a reasonable solution to truly accommodate this person? Like, I would like to accommodate them. Like, yeah. I just don't know of a reasonable, like, because literally you're talking about 30 years in, of which they've been making foils of this level for at least 23-ish of that, you know, like,
yeah.
So I don't know what you would even do. You know, maybe going forward, you can maybe change when you have foil text. Maybe you don't foil the text box or something. I don't know, right? There's maybe something you could do moving forward to make them easier to read. I just don't know if you can retroactively fix anything at this point.
And to show you how widespread the issue is, this is the thing we had both wanted to talk about, but we each ran into a couple of things. We hadn't discussed accessibility being a theme this week, but it just so happened that so many of the stories that came across our social media and everything, things we came up with in our research is, hey, wow, this is, because in addition to this thing happening, again, roughly the same week, same time, MLB The Show is coming out very soon, and their new user interface, again, just for somebody with regular vision, is really hard to look at. Kind of, none of us know why they picked that. And then people with visual impairments have mentioned, and we really can't even read it at all. So that's a thing they're going to have to, in short order, do something about, because that's a huge, huge licensed game. It drops on PlayStation 5 and Xbox, and for anybody that wants to purchase that or not purchase it, it's free on Xbox. So yeah, that's a huge game, and it's being covered now by all the people that talk about video game news. So there's going to have to be some kind of redo or solution or update or something, because it's a PR nightmare if something isn't done, in addition to all the problems it's going to cause for, if somebody buys MLB The Show, can't see what the cards do, because now they have cards, as most sports games do now, there's a card collecting mode. If you can't see what the, and I mean, it's not just you get this card, you get this player like it used to be. The cards have ability. They're almost like reading Magic cards. If you flip a card over, it's got a mile of text about the different abilities this card has and all the ratings. And to use that card well, you probably need to be able to read all those things. So somebody buys that, has a bad experience, guess what? They're probably not buying MLB The Show next year.
Yeah, and thinking of, on that same topic, being able to read stuff, we have seen that getting some languages discontinued, right? So that's going to be a barrier for people, right? And that's another one where it's tough because, again, you want to support people. You'd love your game to be accessible to people all around the world, even just as a player. Like, it's cool to encounter other players from around the world and, can just play a game with whoever. That's always awesome. I can say, though, I've been on the business end of trying to get things into South America, and it's not easy. Like, without saying too much, I can say that, we made a lot of concessions of, working with different companies, shipping different ways, trying to ship stuff early, stuff that would get stuck in customs forever, customs would check products. I think I mentioned that before, and, people would complain about, why did we get boxes that were cut open or whatever? And it's like, I can't tell the government to not mess with your product, right? Like it just is what it is. So there's a lot of hurdles there that add cost all along the way. And that's tough when the combination of Magic also getting more expensive. Granted, a lot of things have, but Magic has definitely gotten more expensive.
Yeah, because a lot of the things that got expensive are, food, water, yeah, clothing, essentials. Other things you got to have,
And that's the thing. If you're in a country where they're not necessarily making a ton of money per person in a place like Brazil, then more of your money is going to go to essentials and not to Magic. So then it gets really tough.
I'm an American. I'm having to make those same decisions. We all are having to figure, as we just talked about, everybody from billion-dollar corporations to, family of three or four, or five in my case, is having to figure out what we can and can't spend money on.
And it's a tough thing. Because now you have the situation of, they're spending less on Magic and the price of Magic gone up. So even people could afford it, fewer of them are buying it. So now it's less worth it for WOTC to send stuff into Brazil, right? Because now you're printing, you have all your costs, your localization, all that stuff. And now you're making less for every product you're sending there, and you're selling fewer boxes. And you're already paying for all those extra issues to ship early and change your printing processes and all the stuff to get stuff there. So yeah, it's tough. And I mean, the solution could be just make the Portuguese product cheaper, but then that has its own issue, because then now people would be trying to buy a Portuguese product because it'd be cheaper than buying the US product. Now you got it. And there's already rules technically within WOTC that you're not supposed to ship sealed product out of the borders, and but people do it. It's a thing, yeah. You know? So it's tough, man. This is another one of those ones where, like, I get the decision. It's corporate being corporate.
Right. They got to cut back somewhere, and it's
frustrating. But at the same time, I don't want to see people have to do without.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Just in terms of growing the game, you know, it's a huge loss for those communities. Because, again, if I can buy the card in my language, or the card that's in, you know, in this case, in English, I'm good, because I reversed the roles. If there's a card game that I really wanted to play, but they didn't have any cards in English, and I had to try to learn to read Spanish or Japanese or Portuguese, I wouldn't do it. I'd just play some other card game. So I know that's the decision that most other people are going to make. I'm certainly not going to give them money to, you know, not have cards in my language. So I get their frustration. This is one of those where it's difficult. I can see both sides. I understand why Wizards has to cut back. But I also understand how hard it's going to be for somebody that can't get cards in their language to pick up the game. And it's a hard problem for Wizards too, because obviously the game is not going to grow at the same rate in those countries. And even, you know, while you're trying to save money, your long-term goal is to try to increase the gathering, spread the game globally. One of the things, I listened to some of the people, you know, that talk more about the financial aspects of Magic, and therefore, and I didn't think about it this way, because for the read that listened to other people's content, they were frustrated that, you know, Wizards, they feel like it is not getting enough of the Chinese market, which, as we know, is a huge gaming market. And for whatever reason, Magic isn't making, I guess, some of the inroads as some of the other games are. And they don't know why. I don't know why, but obviously this isn't going to help. You know,
yeah, and it's kind of always been that way, to my knowledge. Like, it's sold there okay, but it never was as big as it has been in a lot of other countries. And I couldn't even tell you why. I don't know if it's culturally,
right. Yeah,
the themes of the game. Like, it's just something that I remember always being an issue.
I remember, and they did a Three Kingdoms set, and I'm assuming that was targeted, you know, trying to increase the Chinese fan base, because that is a huge piece of culture, which is why it gets mined for movies, anime, video games, etc.
But even with that, that wasn't that big there, all things considered.
So if you adapt, you know, one of the most famous pieces of literature and you still get nothing, I'm sure Wizards has to be thinking, we don't know what to do.
And if I remember right, they even did the dual decks with it was the blue and the green planeswalker, the one green one that had like the dog as the companion or whatever. But if I remember right, they worked with like writers and artists and stuff in China to make those, so they had more appeal in that market, and it ended up not being a thing for whatever
good
reason.
Lord, how many years ago was that?
That was before
I started playing.
That was been in 2017, I think, 2016, somewhere around then.
Okay.
So it was just.
I guess it's not quite as old as I thought. I thought it was before.
No, it's fairly recent, I guess, okay. in Magic terms. But
right, as much as anything is for.
Yeah, so that's always been a thing, and you know, and people complain too when they cut out. I think it was Russian and Korean at the time. But those were also two little bitty markets. And I'm not even exaggerating. Like anytime you printed something from like Russian and Korean, those were the two smallest. Like everything else was 6, 8, 10 times more than that. So like even spending all that for shipping and again localization and all that, like you were trying to take care of like 10 stores in Korea or whatever, you know.
And that, like, goes back to like what you said about the government, Russia and Korea, at least in the northern part. We're talking about two of the world's most oppressive governments. Like right now, a lot of people are cutting their Russian support because they have no desire to do business with the Russian government. And
yeah,
but it, you know, obviously Vladimir Putin at the end of the day does not really care who's getting hurt. If you're not putting FIFA out in Russia, the Russian players that it played and enjoyed FIFA, or, you know, Yu-Gi-Oh, insert entertainment product here. And again, because it's an entertainment product considered to be non-essential, nobody's going to cut to the front of the line and try to figure out why this is not happening. In many cases, these governments don't want more Western culture in their country, so they're happy to see it not come in.
Yeah, so it's a fine line, you know, because again, you want to support as many people as possible. You want the game to grow. But at the same time, like you said, you know, it's if you're really being honest about it, I can understand both sides.
That, like, reminds me, do you know if they're going to sell Fallout in Russia?
I don't believe it's going to be printed in... I mean, it's obviously not going to be printed in Russian, but I don't even know if it's going to be sold there, to be honest.
Because, you know, Fallout is, for those that don't know the backstory, it's post-apocalyptic, and the whole thing that happened is it's America being at war with Russia and China. And I mean, some of the cards that made this set, like there's a card for the giant robot, Liberty Prime. Liberty Prime is an incredibly xenophobic android that goes around shooting, you know, Russian and Chinese soldiers and spouting things like, communism is the literal definition of failure. So I can't imagine Vladimir Putin would want that card sent into his country.
Yeah, probably not.
Fallout probably is, not. By design, Fallout is kind of parodying the Cold War, and it's making it makes fun of America, too. But again, we have freedom of speech here, and you're allowed to make fun of the American military. Russia, not as much.
Oh, for sure. And I think that's one of the reasons that stuff probably, it kind of just works out okay that it's not going to be sold there, because it's just that's kind of one of the things they ran into anyway, right? We this goes all the way back to the Chandra and Nyssa thing, right? Those are two of the markets where you can't really tell that story there, right? You can't safely, you know, promote some of your stuff there or whatever. And that just kind of tacks onto it a little bit of all that.
Yep. We just watched Color Purple, and, you know, while it's alluded to in the original movie, the new one is, it's very, very obvious Suge and Seeley are gay, but they don't dance around it. So I don't think it's being showed in a lot of places because of that message. It totally is not fair, but people are terrible.
I know
what you're saying.
But. Yeah, like if the governments of those places say this isn't allowed, like you can't do anything about that.
Unfortunately, you really.
And to be clear, I disagree with those governments,
right,
but I'm also not trying to get people, hell, not just fired, but possibly killed. You know what I mean?
It's one of the frustrations we have, you know, as we try to run a global game.
Now, I will say this too. On top of all of this, we do have the other issue of, because I started following some beginner Magic groups just out of curiosity recently, and there's still the issue of people, and this is just a gaming thing, but carrying a level of elitism that doesn't benefit the growth of the game, whatever the game is, right? But when a new person comes along and just something doesn't make sense, right? They're asking about a particular rule. Like, say, in Magic, is it okay if I try to, when I count my deck out, I put a land every three cards? And you have to explain to them, like, no, that's mana weaving. But if you do it, you need to make sure you at least shuffle up so your deck's randomized, blah, 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 right? But I saw a post where somebody's like, well, no, you idiot. If you do that, that's cheating and blah, blah, blah. It's like the person's asking because they don't know. It doesn't make sense to them if it is or isn't. They haven't even thought. They're not even advanced enough to think about cheating techniques yet.
Right.
They just want to know, how do I play this game fairly? And you jumping down their throat isn't going to help educate them and want them to stay around. Right. It's the same thing we've talked about when one of the reasons I don't play League of Legends anymore is, even at the scrub level, there were just knuckleheads constantly that I'm like, man, I'm even experienced and I can't tolerate you. I can't imagine what new players deal with. So it's like, those literally keep people away from your game. Like, I'm an example, you know? So that's something we just got to be better about as gamers as well. It's like, hey, sure, all these other issues aside, there's some stuff we can control. And that's just being welcoming and friendly and answering some questions. Sure, I can tell you, in the 30 plus years I've played Magic, I have probably right at 30 years, I have answered some questions probably 200 times. Probably more than that, because I had the store. There's some I definitely answered more than 200 times. But you still do it, because that's the first time for that person. They don't know. If you don't want, especially on social media, if you don't want to answer it or you think it's stupid, you don't have to hit send.
Preach.
Right? Just don't answer. Leave it to somebody. I will step up, or somebody else in these different groups will step up and answer it, or respond to them on Twitter or whatever. You don't have to say anything. Nobody cares that you think you're better or that you learned this 10 years ago or whatever. This person's brand new. They don't know you. They don't know the rules. They don't know nothing. They're just trying to experience the game in the proper way, and they're asking how to do it.
And so whether you know it or not, or remember, you were that player at one time in your life.
Oh,
all of us
sure.
started these games. Even if you read the instruction manual, any game, especially Magic, there's a million things beyond the instruction manual, a million questions that it never occurred to. Because, again, you never know what kind of question somebody's going to have. So it's impossible. I speak for somebody that's had to write guides on how to do things. You can't anticipate every question, especially if you've been playing something for 10 years. That's why I realized very early that in a family of teachers, that was not the career I was going to go into. Because even sometimes when I understand things, I am not the best at explaining it to somebody else. So again, teachers are such a gift to us, and we don't appreciate them.
Yeah, that's definitely just one of those things that we, like I said, we just got to be better. And if you're not good at it, like you're saying, maybe you're not a teacher or whatever, you're just not built that way, don't answer.
Yeah.
Right? You're not hurting anybody. Just let it go. Somebody else will take care of that.
You can literally give somebody a link if you know of somebody or somewhere that it's explained better. That's one of the things I have to do all the time. It's like, I know what I'm trying to say, but this person said it infinitely better than I did. And again, I'm a writer, and that still happens to me sometimes, where this person just did a far better job of explaining X, Y thing.
Yeah, I'm with you. Like, and again, that's something we can control and makes the game more accessible to everybody, and being able to use the community as a resource or whatever. Because honestly, people forget, when you're new to things, sometimes you don't even know where to look. You know, they say, oh, go Google it. Like, hell, they don't even know the right term to Google, so they get the right thing to come up. Like, how would they know how to describe the thing they're asking the question for? Like, literally, they'll say, hey, I don't know what the right way is to say this, so I'm just going to ask. And then they write a paragraph explaining their situation. You're like, okay, cool, we can help you out. But yeah, that's just something we just got to be better about.
Yeah.
But anyway, let's move on. Let's get into the soapbox here. All right, so if you didn't know, Outlaws of Thunder Junction is coming. We're a few weeks away. And yeah, and I think it's going to be cool. However, there is a thing that's rubbed me a little weird, and I don't know. It's been sitting with me, and I don't know how I totally feel about it. But they have a term for the set that I guess is going to be a thing we use going forward called committing a crime. Now, this feels like it should have been a new Capenna thing, with all the crime families.
I was
going to
say, when you mentioned it, that feels like that's where that should have, especially when they're, I guess it may be one of those things where they conceived it after they had kind of already stopped thinking about New Capenna.
Yeah. And I also get it that it's themed. It's Outlaws at Thunder Junction, so sure. But calling something a crime, which, by the way, something that's a crime is basically, if you've targeted a thing of the opponent's or something they control or something on the stack, controlled by your opponent. So basically, interacting with their stuff is considered a crime. Which is also weird to call it a crime, but you know, whatever. And I kind of thought, like, could we have called it, like, a heist or something? Like, was there not a better word?
But wouldn't heist have the same connotation?
Sort of,
I don't know what word I'd use now that I've called it. I don't.
But there's got to be something debate. Better. You know?
We both agree there has to be, but neither one of us can think of one. Right?
But here's my concern. Like, there's nothing wrong, and I want to be clear. There's nothing, by the definition, wrong with using the word crime. It's just a word to describe a thing. Like, nothing's really happening. It's a game mechanic, whatever. So it's not like it's peak issue. But I think about the number of times I've been places or having to go into spaces where you're having to be careful with the language you're using already because they already have barriers to fantasy, sci-fi, sorcery, whatever. You live in some place that's super religious or already super conservative, whatever, already have issues, right? And now they're going to overhear you saying, like, well, you committed a crime, or like, I'm going to commit a crime to do whatever. Or like, it just feels weird. You know what I mean? Like, and it's one of those things, again, I don't think it's anything that's like high level wrong. But man, there's going to be some spots where that's going to be uncomfortable to say or do or whatever. On top of if somebody's already looking down on you for playing the game, or heaven forbid they view you for being a certain color or whatever, like they come by, like, the conversations are going to over here are going to be a little weird. And I don't know. I don't know, man. There's just something about it. I can't even put a finger on it, but it's just all those things combined kind of make me a little uneasy about the term. Now, will I have a problem if I'm sitting at a Command Fest or a Magic Con playing with somebody using it? Like, absolutely not. Cause you're in the right space. Nobody's going to care. We say a lot of other crazy things for gaming or whatever in those spaces or gaming conventions. But I'm thinking about like, the times I've done stuff literally at a church or at a school or a library or whatever, you know what I mean? Where it's not gamers, full-time gamers around. Like, I don't know. It's probably fine.
Of course, some of those places, you know, you're going to have a problem just by playing Magic because, ooh,
sure.
Demons or skeletons or whatnot. So it's just...
But you don't want to compound that, you know, like, and make it worse.
I don't know that I'd have a magic turban at a church because I would be scared that, yeah, somebody would see it that way.
It's not even necessarily a tournament. Sometimes we've just done demos, or there was like a parents' night out, so we entertained the kids and taught them how to play stuff.
I don't know that I'd do a demo at a church because I know the South. Somebody around there is going to have.
But, you know, again, after school stuff that we've done things for people, you know, we've done stuff at fairs. We've done stuff with Chamber of Commerce things. Like, there's a lot of non-gamer spaces or non-gamer heavy spaces where gaming can happen or demos can happen. And that's what just like, man, I saw that and I thought about it. And I was kind of like mostly fine with it. But the more I thought about it and the phrases you have to say or whatever, I was like, I don't know, man. I don't know. It's probably fine.
I'd be nervous holding it, you know, probably any place, like you said, convention center or conference center. Okay. I would feel like you're probably not going to hopefully have as many problems. Church. Yeah. I would probably try to avoid. I feel like library is probably going to be fine because libraries host all kinds of groups and they probably
you would
have
think
already...
so.
for example, you know, I'm sure a lot of libraries have hosted a gay pride event, and yeah, they've probably had the pushback, but hopefully they've learned over the years how to, because again, so many organizations politically have, libraries a common meeting place for all manner of organizations, and even if you want to protest the library, if that's all you want to, if you got... Unless you have a whole bunch of spare time on your hands, you probably ain't going to be able to.
Hey, bro, you got neighbors trying to shut down your library, so.
Yeah, that's what's.
You know.
That's what's frightening. I will say that a lot of to be fair, there are a lot of librarians that have just said, you know what, I'm looking for another. By the way, that's sad. That we're forcing librarians out of the position.
Dude, there was the libraries down in Houston. They're talking about shutting down to try to turn them into, like, juvenile detention centers or something.
Yeah.
Which is crazy.
I don't think anybody thought about the optics on that one.
Like, you literally are saying, like, well, we're going to make people, we're going to make you less educated, but we're going to turn this building into where to put you once you are doing things because you're less educated, Reverend. Like, come on, man.
Yeah, education, you're supposed to be trying to keep people out of prison. And yeah, I was blown away by that.
It's crazy. It's crazy. But yeah, anyway, like I said, it's more the phrasing, and it's like the first keyword I think I've had a real and not even a keyword, like game mechanic, that I've had an issue with. And I don't even think I have like a hard issue, but it's just something.
What was the one from New Capenna about the, what were the drugs called? I forget.
Halo.
Yeah. And you really.
Yeah. Halo didn't even bother me that much. That's what I'm saying. It's weird that like, this is just somewhere just sitting with me a little bit. Now, I don't know what to do about it.
I guess the thing is, if you say Halo out loud, probably nobody's going to understand.
Yeah. There's just like, it doesn't. Yeah. You have to know the game lore for Halo to mean anything. Right, like this is just a generic term in society that's already attached to certain groups already, like already frowned upon and like going to be assumed. And now you're just verbally saying it, even though it's not the thing they think it is, I guess. Like, it's weird. This is one I'll probably come back to this in a few months and be like, okay, now that I've played with it a while and whatever, yeah, how do I feel about it? But yeah, it's just a weird
spot. Y'all, if after this drops, if you encounter a thing out there that where something like this happened, by all means, let us know.
But all right, dude, that's all I got. I'm going to give you some time.
Kind of speaking about gaming and cultural perceptions, gamers of a certain age will remember the Oregon Trail. I'd describe it to my kids. It was Elden Ring or Dark Souls before we had Elden Ring or Dark Souls.
You were hardcore overselling Oregon Trail. But I feel you. It was our game that everybody played.
Well, I'm saying, like, it was, especially for the games that we when you go from playing games like Pac-Man.
Sure.
Oh my God, you've been playing this game for 2 seconds and you died. I'm not talking about graphically, obviously. I'm talking about in terms of, this is a game that in so many ways felt like it was designed to break you. The irony being that it was in almost every school system because it was a very educational game. You know, you were learning about going west. But as with so much media of the time, its depiction of Native Americans was, to put it mildly, not a favorable interpretation. So in remaking the game this time, the designers realized, yeah, we have to do way, way better. And they did what should have been done the first time, but almost never was. They consulted actual Native Americans to give the characters, basically to turn them into fully fleshed out characters and not just an obstacle for you to get. Because really in the first game, Native Americans are, again, like in a Western, who are there just, almost, oh, by the way, you got shot by an Indian. Restart the game. That's the way the characters were treated. So they consulted with some people to actually get, first of all, fully fleshed out characters and to learn what people of the time, how they would have behaved. For example, one of the things they mentioned was, yeah, first thing, not everybody needs to have braids. Not all Native Americans wore their hair that way. So that's one of the things. And again, with a room full of largely white people putting this game together, nobody would have thought to question the hairstyles. Another thing they mentioned was that this is, I guess, it was 1840s, I believe. By that point, gunpowder was a thing. They would not all be carrying bow and arrows. There's people that hunt with bow and arrow today because they enjoy it. But again, it's not everybody, especially even by then. Many Native Americans were using guns. It was fairly common at that point. That's another thing that a room full of white game designers would not have known about the culture at the time. So, again, it's just something that's, you know, they're telling everybody about this because obviously they, you know, Oregon Trail in many ways is a game of its time. If you looked at any TV show that depicted Native American, well, any Western, like we're talking about Outlaws of Thunder Junction, any Western TV show, any Western movie made at the time had many of the same problems. If you could even find a TV show that had Native American characters as anything other than the antagonist for John Wayne to blow away and then move on to the next thing.
There's two things they got to keep, though. You got to be able to lose some horses when you're trying to cross a river.
Absolutely.
And half your people got to die of dysentery.
Yeah, it's still, I've seen some of the reviews, it still kicks your butt. And like I said, for a game, you know, this is, in many cases, it's the first video game anybody played. As you mentioned with you know, crimes and magic and things, a lot of people had stricter parents. They didn't believe in letting your kid have any kind of screen time. So, but, you know, this is educational. So maybe this is okay. And yeah, this is for many people, this is the first video game they ever played. And it was designed, well, I don't know if they designed it to kick your butt, but that's basically what happened because they watched
the show. I would say at least the first computer game a lot of people played.
Yeah.
For sure. Because, like, it was this, or for a lot of people, like Carmen Sandiego. I think those were, like, the two that almost everybody has played one of those as their first games.
And you talk about educational games done right. I don't think there's a better example in the industry than Carmen Sandiego, which is why she was able to come. She became a game show.
Oh, yeah.
A TV show. Carmen Sandiego is a whole franchise. I think there's a Netflix adaptation. Carmen Sandiego. And again, somebody that was, I want to say, I forget which actress plays Carmen in the new adaptation, but she mentioned that she wanted to be Carmen Sandiego because it was, even though Carmen is a thief, Carmen is still an incredibly smart character. She gets over on the police. Carmen always gets away at the end of the episode. You might solve the crime, but you never catch Carmen Sandiego. And she's, so yeah, she was a beautiful character, incredibly smart character, and again, always finished the show with the upper hand. And you very rarely saw, first of all, you very rarely saw any Latin characters, and you certainly very, very rarely saw any of them that always won at the end. So the actress talked about just how she was ecstatic when they offered her the role. And I forgive me, I don't remember who the actress was, but I remember reading that interview and just talking about how much of a joy it was for her to play. And I was just thinking about the educational aspects, but yeah, as we talk about all the time on here, representation matters.
Well, let's follow up because we have a couple of fun things that we need to get to before we start wrapping up in the show. And honestly, these should be two pretty fun things to talk about. So what do you got?
All right. As I alluded to a little bit earlier, I've had an interesting WWE leaderboard experience. I started playing WWE 2K24 and figured, hey, I'm going to start and be doing content right at the launch anyway. Let me go online. Let me try to play. Let me see how well I do in the, as I mentioned earlier, it can be a wretched hive of scum and villainy. But as I said, right now, ranked somewhere between 20 and 50 by the time you hear this. And then as I was looking at my videos, one of them had a huge spike in views and impressions. So I was wondering, okay, well, I figured it must have got to just the videos and attached to somebody. So I'm going and trying to figure out which YouTuber, I figured it's another YouTuber that probably does WWE content. Turns out it was WWE. Like, the WWE has a suggested video, or has a video that links to mine as a suggested video, and my jaw hit the floor. So Tisha's asking me, what did you do different? And I swear, nothing. I put all the same tags on it I would ordinarily put. I did everything pretty much the same way I would ordinarily do it. It just so happened the algorithm smiled on this video. I don't know what to tell you, but that happened. So yeah, this has been a very eye-opening experience, as I mentioned. And I do want to say, I hadn't done a full review yet, but spoiler, the game is great. I'm enjoying it a lot. It's really just, if you like wrestling at all, and especially if you like wrestling video games, absolutely go pick this up, and heck, I'll probably see you online.
Well, I hope you get a lot of views from being linked. I don't know how that's going to work out for you, but I hope it goes
so far. It's been going pretty well. So
that's good, dude. Now, the thing I want to talk about is, this is a story we haven't really mentioned for, I think, about 6 months, because there was this, like, you know, you got to get to the whole trial phase and everything else. But for those of you that may be new to the show, there's a character we've been following that goes by Chiefsaholic. This is a dude, for lack of a better explanation, is he's got a big wolf fur suit, and he shows up to every Chiefs game decked out in Chiefs gear. He's got like a jersey, hat, you know, carries stuff, the whole nine yards. Which, that part isn't the weird part. But there was a period of about 3-4 days where nobody had heard from Chiefsaholic, and they don't know what's going on, because he shows up to all the, like, things in the city, and he shows up to the games. And then there was a point where somebody similarly dressed to Chiefsaholic in similar outfit had shown up at a bank robbery. And people are like, oh, that's weird. But then they started connecting the dots and going, hey, is it possible this is the same dude? Because what are the odds that somebody else is going to dress up like Chiefsaholic, happen to have robbed a bank on the same week where he starts becoming more scarce, where he's expected to be. And then there was another one, and then they started connecting pieces, and then the family, you know, background.
And it became a mess. The cops got to be thinking, he can't be this stupid. There's no logical way he can be this stupid.
Dude, I'm with you. Bare minimum, you get a different fursuit. You know what I mean? Like, why is there... I'm being real, though.
Maybe the first time that statement has ever been a first thing. Especially in terms of committing a crime. First, you got to get a different fursuit.
But why show up in the exact same thing, right? Like, you, it makes no sense. You are a very definable, identifiable character.
As we talk about, not that we're giving tips on how to commit crimes, but I think everybody knows you want to be as inconspicuous as possible when you're robbing a bank.
Like, it would make more sense for somebody not Chiefsaholic to dress up as Chiefsaholic to go rob a bank, so they're at least looking at Chiefsaholic as a suspect and not them. Yeah. You know what I mean?
And then you figured you'd be like, no, I was at the game. What are you talking about?
But anyway, they eventually track this dude down. His name is Xavier Babadar, actually, who apparently he has some slight mob ties in his history, from what I understand. But once it was all said and done, I believe the number I saw was that he is being suspected in 11 bank robberies.
I can't believe he got to 11 before.
I can't either.
Like, you figure after robbery number 2, somebody shows up dressed up like the Kansas City Wolf. You immediately go interview the KC Wolf just to make sure it's not him, you know.
And I think that was part of it, too. They couldn't find him for a while, and they'd gone to his house, and he wasn't there. So now they know he's not in the area. And then, like, just became easier and easier to realize it was him. It was just a matter of catching him at that point. But, yeah, they're saying 11 banks, dude's likely to do 50 years in prison, no parole.
I can't wait for the inevitable Mark Wahlberg movie.
Yeah, and he's got to pay all that money back. That's on top of it, so that he'll be paying that off forever.
Yeah, because like, you make, what, 2 cents an hour? In
yeah, you make
he'll
nothing.
Never get all that paid back.
Like, and the crazy part is, this wasn't like he was robbing to pay off his house or whatever. He was robbing just to keep going to the games and go to these special events and make bets on Mahomes being the league MVP and just dumb things. It wasn't even like he desperately. I think he just got caught up in the celebrity of it all. Like, he got used to being in these stories and being featured on TV and getting invited to these team events and this, that, and the other. And at some point, I think he was like, I can't lose this. And he didn't know what else to do.
What sucks is, like, we talked about people, you know, not understanding, you know, that crime is a game term and we're playing the game. So many people are going to try to latch it. See, that's why gambling is bad. We knew when you legalized sports gambling in most of the country. No, this guy was just an idiot.
Oh, he's an absolute idiot.
This would, as you mentioned, he would have done this just to keep going to Chief games. Now, he was also betting on them, but as you say, he got caught up in being a celebrity and, yeah, also in gambling on sports. But this is some low impulse control, low strategy behavior right
yeah,
here.
Yeah, dude, it's crazy. Just crazy. And the weird thing is, we've seen other teams bring people like that on to just be at every game, be at special events, be at school functions. You know, hell, using the Dallas Cowboys as an example, they have, what's the black dude's name? It starts with an R. But, like, he's out there riding a horse all the time, and he's out there every week. And, like, people see him at every game or whatever. He's been doing that for, God, I don't know, I think damn near my whole life. Right? Like, I almost don't remember a time where he wasn't there. Yeah. But that was just a dude once upon a time. And they were like, you know what? Everybody likes this guy. Let's make him part of the production. And, like, he becomes a thing. But I've seen that at a lot of stadiums. They have, like, the local person or super fan or whatever that they just, like, just get an agent and your agent will hook it up.
Remember the WWE sign guy that became famous, you know, for holding up signs? And then he became a celebrity himself and he got on Deal or No Deal and he had gotten so famous at that point. Other wrestlers showed up. He's not a wrestler, but wrestlers showed up to heckle him because he had been heckling them for the past, you know, 10 years or so. which is a it's great.
Like, dude, there were ways around this that you didn't have to get into all this, but it's a crazy story. I hope right now somebody is rushing around to sign the deal to get this documentary done, because it is a crazy story.
Wahlberg, this screams Mark Wahlberg movie. This just sounds like a Mark Wahlberg
dude. I'm telling you, toss it on Netflix. I'll watch it tomorrow. Like, because this is too interesting, start to finish, to not want to know. Like, what were the real details behind this? Like, what was the thought process of going to like the third or the fourth bank just dressed as a wolf?
For this to get to 11,
yeah. Crazy. I used
to cover crime for a living. This is the longest, dumbest crime spree I think I've ever heard of in my life.
It's wild, dude. It is wild.
I'm jealous now for whoever got the, I guess the Kansas City Star would be the lead agency on this. I'm jealous for whoever got to write about this, because, man, this is a Pulitzer.
It was fun to follow. It had to be fun to follow. Right. But all right, we have a couple of quick topics, and then we're going to get to the dinner table. Brian, I don't know if you heard, but it's almost time for Slipknot to start having their music and stuff appear in Dead by Daylight. I know you're a fan.
I did not, because Dead by Daylight is dropping so many bangers lately with new licensed killers and new killer that is. You talk about how crime sounds weird. I'm looking forward to the killer that's coming out next week.
Yeah, exactly.
Dead by Daylight is another game that's kind of hard to talk about in mixed company. You're talking about serial killing and putting people on the hooks, and you got to put the knife this way, but yeah.
But dude, I mean, I still see people streaming it. I still hear a lot of people playing it.
Yeah.
You know, they have new releases, it seems like, on DLC, like every other month.
I know people that don't play the game, don't watch horror movies, but watch people play Dead by Daylight because it is so much fun to watch that whole... It's almost like basketball when you see one of the survivors and how they're able to just basically take the killer's ankles and have him go one way, you go the other way, and then you have to loop him around the whole, it's wild.
And then, you know, now they have all these musical groups being involved.
Yeah, so, Iron Maiden is doing a collab right now.
Yeah, that's just wild. Because I remember when this game came out, and I was like, oh, that seems kind of cool. I would have never thought it would have had legs this long. And keeps getting all these updates that people are excited about. That's really cool.
It didn't create the genre. I think Evolve was one of the first big games I saw that did the whole asymmetrical 4v1 type thing. But they are by far the best at it. They're the only one. They've been doing this for, I want to say, 6-7 years now. And most of the games come out and they die immediately because, no pun intended, they just don't capture that. There's a Texas Chainsaw Massacre that essentially has kind of the same setup, and we thought that would be, you know, and no, it's struggling. It probably won't. Hate to say,
you know,
it probably won't be around
for all the new games. Is they're in that thing where you're not Dead by Daylight, right? Like, it's when we went through that stretch where MMOs came out, and it's like, oh, yeah. Well, you're not WoW. You know, like that's what everything's compared to, and if you're not even close, everybody goes, ah, whatever. I'll just go play the other thing, and that's probably where you're at with that. So, congrats.
Yeah, the next person to do it is simply going to do something that's just way different and really, like, my suggestion, because, you know, Dead by Daylight is obviously a horror movie, not family friendly. I want a Scooby-Doo game with that same setup.
Nice.
Not a killer, but a goofy somebody dressed in a rubber mask, and the rest of you are the Scooby gang, and you got to figure out how to unmask him at the end. Get on that, Warner Brothers. Of course, it was Warner Brothers. They probably canceled it before it came out for a tax refund.
Oh, some other fun stuff that came up. Joe Johnson with Tabletop Jocks. You've probably heard me mention on the show before that they do the cookout every year, usually around Juneteenth-ish if they can schedule it. But this year they've had to move it to a Thursday-Friday situation instead of being over the weekend. So it's going to be June, I believe, 20 and 21 in LA. But now it's going to be more open to the public. So if you want to reach out to Tabletop Jocks or Joe, he goes by Black Nito on Twitter, you can send him a message and get an invite, and I believe it's going to allow 150 people. So even if you're not a content creator and you want to maybe come hang out and meet some of the content creators or play some games with them or whatever, the content creators will obviously be shooting content with Tabletop Jocks. But if you want to come hang out, be part of some fun stuff in LA for a weekend, hit them up. Like, this is the first chance for the public to be involved in this, and it's actually pretty cool. So yeah, you get to come out, and there will be a lot of creators of color, you know, just different backgrounds that are going to be there. So you get to meet some people that maybe you don't know about or haven't seen very much of, and it's a chance to just hang out, have some fun, play some Commander. It'll be a good time. And got to tell everybody about the Hunter Burton Memorial Open. That is next weekend. That is coming up real quick. The weekend, I got to check my calendar so I don't say the wrong words. The 15th to the 17th. That Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And, dude, this year, I was just re-looking at their schedule because I shared it around the other day and counting the events. It's almost 40 events scheduled, not counting all of the, like, opens of, like, the Commander stuff. There's going to be on-demand events with different formats, different drafts. There's a ton of artists that are going to be there. They've already been listed. I think RK Post, Ben Schnuck, Sarah Finnegan, Carl Braun, like, several. And there's a bunch of vendors as well. So if you're looking to buy stuff, sell cards, pick up things you haven't been able to get your local spot, there's going to be a bunch of those. And on top of all that, there's still all the silent auctions. There's, like, the hotel is conveniently located literally on top of the event center, so you ain't got to go anywhere. Like, it's a nice time, dude. It's basically a convention at this point, and it's all for charity. That's the best part. So they always pick a charity related to suicide prevention and awareness, raise a ton of money every year. One of the best events that goes on throughout the year, one of the best in Texas. And honestly, several people show up to this event saying it's the one event they make time for every year. Or, yeah. Hell, we had people drive from Chicago last year. So people come from all over this. It's a really, really cool event.
It's just a different vibe. We talk about how so many of these events can just get into, especially if you're playing for, you know, pro tours. I'm like, this event has a different feel the entire weekend.
Yeah, if you're going to be anywhere near the Dallas area and you got time off that weekend, swing by and check it out. Like, there's a lot going on and a lot of cool stuff to get too. You might just show up and make some bids on the silent auctions and try to get some cool rare items. You know, get some stuff signed by an artist or whatever. Like, it's pretty cool. It's a wild weekend. And I'll be doing interviews there, being part of their, like, production team and everything, like I have been. So if you want to come by, say hi, I will be there. Come say hello. But that brings us to the dinner table. And this one's one, again, this one we haven't really thought much about. We haven't told each other our answers. But I will ask you, Brian, if you could have Wizards of the Coast host an event or program, or even make a product, what would you want that thing to be?
I think we've talked a little bit about, like, what kind of things you'd like to see. And at this point, Universes Beyond is going to continue to be a thing just for the foreseeable future. So I definitely like to see them do a Conan product at some point, because it, like Lord of the Rings, it drops right in. It's about swords. Sorcery.
It's all right. It could be about some sorcery. It's all good.
Dragons, all those things. And actually, the I'm hearing rave reviews for the new comic. I haven't picked it up yet, but the property is hot again right now. And as I said, it is Lord of the Rings. I know for a lot of people, what they don't like is the dissonance of having the Walking Dead, Doctor Who. Those things have necessarily nothing to do with magic, but Conan fits perfectly. Conan's plane could be just another plane in the multiverse, and there's already a lot of wizards there for all we know. One of them is, although I think the planeswalkers are no longer planeswalkers, right? They've been desparked, so. Some of them have been desparked. Yeah. So yeah, it perfectly fits. And I want to say, again, we are doing a Marvel set. That's confirmed. That's a thing.
We're getting multiple Marvel sets.
So I don't know if they will. Maybe they're already working on this. I hope one of the Marvel sets is probably a bad time to mention them since the video game just tanked. But I'd love a Midnight Sun set because, again, it would fit. It's about Doctor Strange, Ghost Rider, vampires, demons. These are all creatures that already exist in Magic. A Midnight Sun set would be a perfect thematic fit that just happened to have some of the most popular characters in the pop culture universe.
I wouldn't be surprised. I could see that being like a Midnight Suns, you know, Marvel Knights, whatever type set with all that Marvel type Knights of dark side of magic. Fit. You could probably That's do all that. Or many, dark many side years, of Marvel.
Yeah. Yeah, many, many years ago, Versus System did a set. I forget what it was called, but it had Marvel Knights and the Midnight Suns, I want to say, were two of the I think out of four teams, that was two of the four teams out of the set. It ended up being a whole, like, medieval, not medieval, but kind of a, as you said, the darker side of the Marvel Universe. I know they're probably getting, I'm sure they'll do Doctor Strange.
Yeah.
Because he's one of the Avengers, essentially. But I would love just a whole set that plays in that magical universe.
You know, I think if, I don't know, my answer would probably be different a year from now. But I feel like right now, with everybody finally getting excited about Standard again, seeing people post about it online, going to these RCQs, people kind of discovering that Standard has a lot of decks you can play and is actually really fun. I think if I were still at Wizards, I would probably push for a series to go throughout the year. Like, each store runs and maybe an event a week, and there's some Standard-related promos, because that's part of the problem right now, is you have some promos that aren't necessarily exciting because they're not for Standard players. But I get it. You're trying to draw some people in from other formats, you know, so whatever. But maybe even print one or two of the bigger cards in the format. Make those available. And, like, the winner or whoever accumulates the most points in the store at the end of each month gets some number of those promos or whatever. And then at the end of, let's call it 6 months or 8 months, however long you want to do it, there's a tournament for the top 8 participants or top 16 participants in each store. And there's something cool given away. Like, that would drive Standard play. You'd be giving Standard promos. You'd have a guaranteed event at your local store every week. Like, it would help the stores out, because then it's something people are having to come back for because they want to accumulate the points, right? Even if they can't make one or two, maybe they make the ones the next month. So you kind of got people driving all the way through to get to it. I think that would be cool. And I don't think it would be that hard to put together. It would just be a matter of which promos you're deciding to print. Like, that decision would have to be made. But beyond that, I think the rest of that would be doable. So if they do that, I think that almost kickstarts Standard in a lot of stores that otherwise would be kind of struggling with it, even under the circumstances right now. But that's probably what I would do. Just say, like, hey, Standard's exciting. It's fun. People are discovering it. And if you want to make it hot, just do something to, you know, light that gas on fire effectively. But you got to.
The question is, like, do we know for a fact Wizards want Standard?
Oh, yeah, yeah. They've said that. Like, they've made that.
I know they've said it, but Commander is just a license to print money, and I don't feel like it requires. Well, but the
thing is, Standard helps move new cards. That's always been the thing on Standard.
Yeah.
Right? Standard helps move new cards. So they definitely want Standard to be a thing. Like, that's the easiest option they have. I just don't think they know or have considered some of the right approaches right now. Because they're doing some things that are working, but they're working very slowly. And I was like, yeah, just put the foot to the floor and let's go for it, man. I think there's a way you can really make it happen. And I don't care. It's still this idea. If somebody from Wizards is listening, it's all yours. Go do it.
The thing is, if you don't know what to do, should you put the foot to the floor?
I'm just saying,
you
got
to figure out what to do first. And then you
can still outsource me, contract me. I will give you all the ideas and work and help you put it together. Like, it is not.
We don't
want
to do, you know, ready, fire, aim. There's been enough of that, especially where Standard is concerned. Oh, I feel you.
But there's easy ways, multiple things we could do here and make this work. And I don't think the cost would be all that crazy expensive. It's just, again, making sure you plan out the promos and all that other stuff and making sure there's a way to deliver all that. But if you did, yeah, I think it'd be a slam dunk.
I feel like for to keep Standard a healthy format, it really requires so much maintenance. And again, I don't know if Commander does as much because more casual format.
Oh, sure. But the thing is, that's worth it because of the payoff, right? If you can guarantee more boosters that you're releasing are more valuable to more people are going to buy them, right? So it's worth putting in the time and effort. That said, Standard is fairly balanced right now. That's not the issue. It's just a lot of people have been saying, like, oh, well, nobody plays Standard. Standard sucks, whatever. But then you're starting to follow people on social media that are going, like, oh, I played this crazy deck and won an RCQ. And I played a crazy deck and won an RCQ. I even saw somebody post, like, 3 or 4 weeks ago of, like, they've been following all these people who are winning, and they're not even seeing repeat decks hardly. Right? And it's like, oh, well, I didn't know that was a thing. And then even Kibler posted the other day, like, man, I've been playing Standard for the last few days, and I played this deck, and I've been having a blast. I'm probably going to start streaming it more. Right. So, like, everybody's like discovering that, oh, this format's been good for a minute. We just didn't know because all these people have been down talking it.
I feel like the entire time I've been playing Magic, I don't remember a time when the prevailing wisdom was that people enjoyed Standard. If you listen to content creation, it always feels like Standard is horrible. Here's how we fix it. I feel like I see so much more of that than
I can tell you exactly why that is. It's just because Standard was always a thing for the most competitive players, right? It was the format to qualify for stuff. It was PTQs, whatever. It was Nationals with Standard, right? So the Standard players are always going to bitch the most. Like, they always have. Like, you know that as well as I do. Like, entry fee could change $1, and they're like, oh, why? How are you doing this? Or it's like, dude, we're at a badass convention center this time or whatever. Well, I don't care. Y'all should find it. It's like, dude, it's $1. Like, you know what I mean? Like that's just how it is, right? It's always been that way. If their favorite deck all of a sudden isn't good, well, the format sucks because you can't play XYZ anymore. It's like, well, you just play another deck then. Like there's 20 other decks that are good, you know? Like, that's always been a thing. That'll never change. Competitive card gamers, they gonna gripe. We've said
now,
it before.
I guess how do you get new players in the game? Because again, I remember being a new player and coming in, and I'm hearing all this about how Standard sucks. Now, I enjoyed the deck I was playing and I stuck around, but I'm sure a lot of people just
didn't. I'm gonna tell you the biggest difference though is, now you have more personalities talking about it that you can take advantage of that didn't exist before.
That's true.
You know, because before, if like two or three people in your local pool or your local store just said like, oh, that format sucks, you don't want to play it. Whatever the format was, right? Modern sucks, Standard sucks, whatever. You don't want to play it. Then people just didn't play it because the voices you followed said, well, this is no good. I shouldn't be playing it, right?
Or I went to a store one time and they really basically essentially... I was the only one that wanted to play Standard. Everybody else wanted to draft. They were trying to bribe me with things to get me. But again, I hate draft, especially when I was a newer player. I wasn't good at it. Sure. I'm still not good at it because I think it's a chicken and egg situation. I probably don't like it partially because I'm not good at it. And then I got you. It's a cycle.
But yeah, so I could totally see how that's a thing. But, like I said, now that we have more tournaments being a thing, like the Arena Championships are getting coverage, you know, you have an RCQ season where people are seeing all the results being posted. Now you're seeing big name personalities come out and say like, oh yeah, Standard actually is kind of good right now, right? Now you're getting people starting to pay attention to it. And it's like, man, take advantage of this. Like, don't let it wait. And then, okay, well, we have a program coming, but it'll be, who knows, May or June or whatever before it kicks off. And it's like, man, we could be doing this in 3-4 weeks. Let's go. You know, like what are we doing? But yeah, that's my thought. But I mean, right now
what you always say about how big boats turn slowly.
Oh yeah, yeah. But I also, having been part of the crew of that boat, I know the parts that can move quickly. Like, I was also responsible for a couple of those things too while I was there. But yeah, man, let's wrap this up. We are definitely in overtime. Watch everybody where they can find you on social media.
All right. I am Brian Sonic on Twitter and YouTube. Definitely come over and be part of this WWE 2K revolution and watch me bop, folks. I'm about to turn 50. I turned 50 in November, and I'm still mixing on these kids. Said James, if a man has two hands... He's still in the fight.
You're going to look at some young bucks and say, I got one more in me.
Right? Trying to be like Sting.
Yep. Well, even Sting retired. But yeah, y'all can follow me everywhere at Power Dragon, PowerDragn. And again, don't forget, you can sign up for the cookouts. That's coming up. And if you're going to be at the Hunter Burt Memorial Open next week, you can come say hello. But as always, wherever you are watching or listening, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, and good night. Please remember to take care of yourselves and your family. Remember to be awesome, and most importantly, remember to be awesome to each other.
If you'd like to further support Color of Magic, you can find us on our website at colorofmtg.com. We also have a Patreon if you'd like to donate, under patreon.com/colorofmagic. You can also find us on Facebook under Color of Magic. And if you want to follow us along at Twitter, you can find us there at ColorOfMTG. And as always, please share the podcast around to your friends, your network, people you think might enjoy it, because every little bit helps as we're trying to increase our user base.